And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. And it's a busy 3 hours. Hopefully you're on board and will stick with us as you always do throughout the day here on your local radio station, Highland Radio. Now, the lines are open for you, by the way. We've, as I say, got lots of items lined up for you, but we're always very open to hearing what you want to talk about as well. So get your views into us, pass on some information, maybe a bit of good news to 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Don't forget you can WhatsApp your voice notes as well. Give us a call on 074 91 25000, or you can email comments@highlandradio.com. And if you're listening to the podcast or the repeat, feel free to email. We can pick up your comments and carry them through to the next live show. Or maybe you're watching the show. You can do so live every day or when it suits you on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. So that means you can watch it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. And we're across Facebook and on the X platform as well. The Finn Valley Voice is in our hands this morning. Councillor Joy Bird says says the government is using misleading terminology to downplay the extent of the defective concrete crisis in Ireland. She's called on the Minister for Housing to conduct a comprehensive national assessment to determine how many homes and community buildings are affected. I think that'd be really useful information. But that being said, you know, there are people who maybe don't want the fact that the home might be affected to be public or don't want to get involved. So I presume you'd have to opt into this. Councillor Beard said that without this, the full scale of the humanitarian emergency remains hidden. The recent housing plan titled Delivering Homes, Building Communities failed to specify how many homes are impacted by defective concrete. And I would say it's obviously much higher than what we actually know. On to the Nationals. And of course, we broke the news with you on yesterday that Pascal Donoghue has resigned. He's left government now. It's all done and dusted. The reshuffle and appointments has already happened. Simon Harris, quite interestingly, he's the boss of Fine Gael. Pascal Donoghue leaves. Who's a good choice to replace me? I'll do it. The government has suffered a major blow, according to the Irish Independent, the Irish Times, with the departure of Pascal Donoghue, who resigned from the cabinet yesterday to take up a post with the World Bank. He'll resign as a TD this week. Mr. Donoghue will be replaced as Minister for Finance by the Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader Simon Harris. Sources across government acknowledged his departure would deprive the coalition of one of its most respected and affected members. Mr. Donoghue has spent almost a decade as either Minister for Finance or Minister for Public Expenditure or both. Mr. Donoghue, who has delivered 10 budgets, has been a voice for fiscal caution, seeking to restrain the spending demands of fellow ministers and warning consistently of the dangers of relying on the windfall corporation tax revenues. But for many people, what they feel is that we're an incredibly wealthy country, but people don't feel that wealth. You know, that's the fundamental problem. I'm not saying that's his legacy. And, you know, he obviously is shrewd in what he does because the country is rich. But the people don't feel rich, and they don't feel rich in terms of access to, you know, medical, mental health supports, etc. So it's kind of a tricky one, because I suppose he will reflect and say he left the country's finances in good shape. But a lot of people listening to this show today will say that feels like gaslighting, because I don't feel that in my life. And it's getting worse heading into Christmas. On to the Irish Independent. And obviously, there's a lot of interest over here in relation to the Epstein files. And the release of them has sailed through both houses in the United States. There was some concern that it could get bogged down in the Senate, but that hasn't happened now. The bill to release the files will be put before Donald Trump today to be signed and released. It'll be very interesting to see what is in these files. The US House of Representatives voted almost unanimously yesterday to force the release of Justice Department files on the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, an outcome President Donald Trump had fought for months before ending his opposition. 2 days after Mr. Trump's abrupt about-face, the vote passed in the Republican-controlled House by 427 votes to one. I wonder who voted against sending a resolution requiring the release of all unclassified records on Epstein to the Republican majority Senate for consideration. So you name some of the big names in the world, the most powerful people, you know, Bill Clinton, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Donald Trump, royals from Britain, and others as well. But these are the names that we would be more familiar with. They're all in these files in one form or other. Now, I'm not saying that they're all going to be found to have done something inappropriate, but it will be very clear to some extent as to what their role in this entire scandal was. You know, the fact that it's taken so long to release this information, the fact that so many high-profile people, people that were making big decisions, would be involved with this person who, by all accounts, is a paedophile and who was trafficking young women to an island and inviting rich men, primarily. Women were assisting in this, but rich men, to go over to this island and do whatever they wish to do. Now, as I say, those names that I mentioned, I'm not implying that they were involved in that, but they were involved with Epstein, and their extent of their involvement should become clearer. Enoch Burke's heading back to jail. It's covered broadly today, and I'm taking it from the Irish Daily Mail. Sacked teacher Enoch Burke is to be put behind bars for a fourth time after the High Court orders his immediate arrest, saying he's a potential danger to school staff and pupils. I don't think he's a physical danger to them. Maybe the judge is talking of his continuing to turn up at the school he is no longer formally employed by, although he is employed by them as he's dismissed, is appealed. Well, Judge Brian Cregan said Mr. Burke had been willing to sacrifice his former pupils on the altar of his fanatical campaign against transgenderism and had been verbally aggressive and bullying to his former school and the courts. He said Mr. Burke had continuously breached a court order to stay away from Wilson Hospital School in County Westmeath, where he was dismissed in January 2023. And just to clarify, and this is not in any way to pick a side, it's just to state the truth, Enoch Burke is going to prison not because he refused to call a child they, them, but because of his objection to that at the time, his public challenging of the principle of the time led to his dismissal. So it wasn't, he's not in court because he refused to say they, them, but you could argue that the reason this is even in the media at all is because initially he refused to say they, them, but that is not why he's going to prison. Mr. Burke was not in court to hear the judgment, but was reportedly at the school yesterday morning as Gardaí were ordered to arrest him. The judge said Mr. Burke had no more right to be on the school grounds than he has to rob money from a bank. He continued, he has mendaciously claimed repeatedly that he has been jailed because of his opposition to transgenderism. That is completely false, said the judge. He's been jailed because he has breached court orders directing him not to trespass on school property. Judge Cregan also noted that the wider Burke family have been trespassing on the school as a form of political protest to draw attention to their campaign against transgenderism. The judge said Mr. Burke was engaged in grotesque behaviour, and he also suggested that his sister, mother and one of his brothers could end up before the courts on criminal charges as well. Moving on now, and the Europe-wide initiative that has been launched to help young people facing online sexual abuse or exploitation, it has been launched. Help for You, so that's the digit 4 and the letter U, Help for You, an expert-led 24/7 digital platform, will offer help and reassurance to children who often feel they have nowhere or no one to turn to. Launched in Ireland yesterday and facilitated by An Garda Síochána, Help for You is aimed at children and those caring for them, but will also be of interest to parents looking to understand the threats and see what supports are out there. Well, I think this has kind of been done without parents' knowledge. I have to have a look at it. I'm sure it's a very good thing. I'm sure it's a good resource, but I would like to know what my children are potentially going to go and look at, so I'll have to check that out myself to see what it is and what it's about. On to the Sun this morning, and I've had a concern. Now, I'm not the head of Google, but I've questioned people over the last couple of years about an AI bubble, because there's billions being put into AI. And really, it's kind of useful if you want to edit a picture, if you want to help with a bit of a document, right? But in terms of its everyday involvement in our lives, I'm still waiting to see how that will happen. And yet trillions of euro and dollars and all types of currencies have been pumped into this, into this system, that really we have to find out what the future use of it might be. So I've asked on a number of occasions on this show, are we in an AI bubble? Well, anyway, the boss of Google has warned no company would be immune if the artificial intelligence stock market bubble bursts. Sander Piske admitted there was an irrationality in the AI-fueled stock price rise of hundreds of companies. It comes amid fears of a stock valuation bubble similar to the 2000.com crash. And if you look at it, what Grok is the version on X, and Elon Musk is obviously the boss of X. And really what he talks about, you know, coming soon, you'll be able to create 30-second videos from a picture. Like, the amount of money that's being invested in it, and yeah, that's fine. Do you remember when Siri first came out on the iPhone and you would ask it the time, and it was like, yay, my phone tells me the time or what the weather's like? That's really what they're using. That's even what they're promoting AI as now. Elon Musk is saying, you know, soon you'll be able to create 30-second videos. But what is the function of what is the... It's cute, it's cool, but how is that worth the trillions that are being spent on chips and data centers and all that type of stuff? But anyway. And finally, a man charged in connection with an arson attack on an iPass center in Drogheda has been remanded in custody after the presiding judge rejected a bail application. Sean Everett, 25, of Rowla Green, Clondalkin, Dublin, and formerly of Drogheda, appeared before Judge Nicola Andrews yesterday afternoon at Drogheda District Court in County Louth. Refused. Now, there was an article, we're going to talk about this a little later on, and it kind of maybe can feel like gaslighting. We're not trying to do that to you, but it comes from a HR company, okay? So it's not, you know, just someone posting something on social media. But it's about work party advice for employees. Many employees will facilitate work-related social events in recognition of employee endeavours over the previous year, I read. Although these work-related social events mainly take place off-site and outside of business hours, responsibility and liability still lies with the employer to ensure the health and safety of all employees in attendance. So that's all, you know, good advice. But one of the suggestions is that you don't call it a Christmas party, that you refer to it as an end-of-year party, so it's more inclusive. So, do you think that's a good idea? Of interest of inclusivity, I'll read, employees may wish to consider the possibility of rebranding the Christmas party as the end-of-year celebration so that employees of all religions feel included and are more likely to attend the event. So, I mean, I suppose, would you be less inclined to attend an event if it was called the Christmas party, dependent on your religion? Or is this, I feel this story, this release from the HR company, maybe 2 or 3 years out of date. I think maybe there was some appetite for this type of stuff a couple of years ago, but now people are going, listen, hands off. These are traditions. It's not offensive to anyone. It is the Christmas party because it's at Christmas time, just like it's Christmas celebrations, Christmas decorations, etc. Anyway, we've floated it on social media and we're going to talk about it a little later on. Are you real? Are you for real Highland Radio? Well, we aren't, but the HR company are. Christmas is Christmas. End of story, says the listener. It doesn't suit others. They can go back to where they belong, which is not a very helpful comment because this is a HR company now that is effectively drawn commentary from people for people to go home. They may have lived here their entire lives. No Christmas or end of year party in years, so make no odds what you call it. All right, that's okay for you. I disagree, says another listener. The Irish have Christmas parties. All are welcome, but that's the celebration. Another been like that for years, not called the Christmas party anymore. To be honest, I don't think there's even going to be a party this year. We make our own Christmas night out. We can still have the crack and enjoy the company of our friends. That's just some of the comments. As I say, we'll have a chat about it a little later on. Okay, just a quick reminder of our contact details, 086 60 25,000. That's WhatsApps and texts. Body-worn cameras are to be trialled at two Derry hospitals following an increase in assaults on staff. The Western Health and Social Care Trust said the three-month trial at Alt McGelvin Hospital's Emergency Department and Grangewood's Mental Health Unit would increase staff, patient and public safety. To talk more about this, we're joined by Donna Keenan, Director of Nursing, Midwifery and Allied Health Professionals and Chair of the Trust's Management of Violence and Aggression Group. Donna, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for your time. I suppose it might be worth starting with the reality of working in these spaces and the level of violence, aggression, and sort of increases in that and trends that we're seeing.
Yeah, over the last number of years, we've seen a significant increase in the number of violence and aggression incidents towards our staff. And that is both in our hospitals and our community settings. And this can be anything from physical contact to sexual abuse, sexual assaults, and verbal and racial assaults. And actually, very much, sorry, I have a lot of feedback on the line here.
I'm sorry, do you want us to call you back in a traditional line if you're more comfortable with that, Donna, or can you persist?
No, okay, I can persist. It seems to be better now.
Okay.
Right, so thank you. So yes, we have a lot of physical assault towards our staff, and that can be staff who are spat at, who are bit, nipped, hit, slapped, punched. And we've even had a few occasions when we have staff who have had broken bones and who have actually been burned by cigarettes. So we do see the behaviour deteriorating, and what we're hoping by the cameras is that it is a deterrent to people as our staff talk to them and tell them that they will have the camera put on, and we hope that that de-escalates the situation.
Yes, so it would be a presumed worn front-facing on the medical professional. It's not on all of the time. It would just be a case of, right, is there any concern that this might agitate further the person, you know, because we don't know necessarily, you know, what clarity of thought is there for whatever reason. Are there any concerns that this could actually exacerbate the situation?
That might happen on occasion. And then what we would do as well, we have our staff who are trained in our safety intervention. Well, that is de-escalation skills. Well, they will try to talk to the person to try to actually de-escalate the situation as well. But from the other trusts who have tried the cameras so far, we see that it when you try to talk to people and tell them that the camera's gone on, it does take some of the heat and the tension out of it. So it does tend to de-escalate that situation. But we are trying not to aggravate anybody. It is about how do we try to keep our staff safer and all our patients who are in areas safer, particularly in busy ED departments as well, who have to witness sometimes these interactions.
And Donna, is this footage, if need be, admissible? You know what I mean? If charges were brought or what have you, I mean, is that part of the explanation?
Yes, it would be. There would be signs and all up for people to see that the recording would be in place. And yes, that if we need to then, and there is an assault on our staff or very abusive language used to our staff, then we would forward this on to the PSNI, and that would help then towards a prosecution. But it is just to remind people as well that these cameras are only used when our staff feel that they are going into an unsafe situation, and it is only used for that to try to de-escalate that particular situation.
But of course, this is all off the back of a dramatic increase in staff being physically or verbally or racially abused, like a 27% increase over the last 2 years. Is there anything that can point to why we could see such a dramatic increase in the abuse of people that are there to help us?
We've no real indication as to why this is happening. One of the things we think as well is that we sometimes have better reporting of our staff now, who maybe before didn't report, but we are seeing that steady increase over the last number of years. I think it's probably a lack of that respect of people. We do see as well that our hospitals are busier sometimes, so people are more frustrated with the waiting times, which I apologise for. The waiting times are not always what we would want them to be for people. So we understand people's frustrations, but we would ask people to try to respect our staff as well, because they are there trying, as you said, ready to deliver a really difficult job every day to care for people when they're at their most vulnerable.
This is a trial. It's clearly, I imagine, going to be successful because we've seen it work elsewhere. Do you, like, what is the time frame of this trial? And I suppose, what What are the indicators that would see it brought in on a permanent basis?
Well, it is for a 3 months trial at the minute, and we would review then just the outcomes at the end of the 3 months to see, has there been a reduction in any of the violence and aggression incidents? Has it de-escalated them maybe quicker? And then have we had more prosecutions on the back of having the footage there that we can actually show this is exactly what happened? So they'll all be looked at the end, and if this is successful, then I would anticipate that this is rolled out in more of our hospitals and across our other departments, and that would mean in our community where we have a lot of lone workers who go into people's homes and into care homes, and it's also that level of protection for them as well.
Yeah, and I think even if you would hope it would reduce attacks and abuse, but even if it was only the latter, whereby more people were found responsible for this, because we need to get to that, we need to get to the core of why people think this is accessible, whilst acceptable, why so many people do it. And I think the curtain needs to be pulled back so we get, as the general public, a better understanding of exactly what we're talking about. You know, and you can get that through court cases or what have you. I think it's really important, because there's no one doing that job, or any job for that matter, should have to endure that type of treatment.
Yeah, completely agree. I think our staff provide really vital services for people, and we want to be here to be respectful to people, and our staff deserve that respect back. And that's what we're trying to do, is have a more civil approach to each other. Understanding each other's position is really important, and understanding people's frustrations. But this level of violence and aggression to our staff is not acceptable. We come into work to be safe. It's supposed to be a safe environment, and that's what we're trying to do now by the cameras, is make it a safer environment and let people know that this behaviour is not going to be tolerated, and there will be prosecutions.
Yeah, God
as
knows
we share this footage.
It's a tough enough job without that. All right, listen, thank you so much, Donna. Thanks, by the way, for working the through the WeTech issue. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so
Look
much.
After yourself. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye.
Take
bye.
Care. That's Donna Keenan, Director of Nursing Midwifery and Allied Health Professionals, and Chair of the Trust's Management of Violence and Aggression Group. Now, a caller asked the exact same question I asked, so I can answer. Is there a fear that a camera would further provoke attackers? They have been used elsewhere. There is that potential, but they do have a de-escalation policy if that were to happen. But the idea being that it would reduce the overall instances, and then you'd have a plan in place if it were to provoke. Now, these aren't attackers as such. Let's not forget, these are people that have come in on a Friday night into the ED or into other facilities, and spitting, pinching, nipping, cigarette burning. It's horrendous, really, because they are doing just an amazing job there. Some of your comments as we head towards the 9:30 break. 1% of the population in Ireland own 90% of the wealth. Donoghue kept everything sweet for the 1%. Donegal is still the most deprived county in Ireland and has the least disposable income. The second two facts are correct. Is it 1%? That's 90% of the wealth. I thought it was a bit higher. But anyway, I know the point that you're trying to make. In terms of Enoch Burke, yes, it is transgender. You who failed to report the truth will be held accountable. That sounds like a threat, but I don't really care. No, I can only go by the truth. I said quite clearly, and I phrased it really, really quite clearly. The story is as follows. There was a pupil who, and I don't think, is this as much of an issue now as it was then? There was a pupil who wanted to be called they, them. He declined. He refused to do so. Now, that hadn't been dealt with, but then he had a falling out of sorts with the principal of that school, as reported. And then there was a back and forward and eventually he was suspended, and ultimately he was sacked, and I believe now he's appealing that sacking. He decided to still keep going to work, even though really effectively he wasn't entitled to, and that's when he came to the attention of the courts, and that's why he's in prison. And as I said at the time when I was reading the story, because this ain't a hill I'm going to die on, you could argue that this is because of his views on transgenderism, but it's not the reason he's in court, is because of those views. It can daisy chain to this point, but he's in court because he refused to comply with a court order not to turn up at school every day, right? Which is, honestly, I think he could have pursued his agenda a different way. Sounds like the judge, by over-explaining, knows deep down he's on the wrong side of history, says another there. I appreciate that. Traffic is terrible today. The road is jammed everywhere. I presume that is Letterkenny. I know, because it's taken me an awful long time to get to work this weather. Shocking bit of driving just witnessed in Letterkenny. A vehicle drove down the whole way up on the footpath cycle lane from the Dry Arch roundabout to Kelly's Toyota. They actually had to slow down as a man was walking on the footpath. Wonder what was going on there. Maybe they were, was that to slip up the traffic to turn left? Not fantastic driving, it has to be said. Dr. Marcus De Bruin is a GP, philosopher and parent, and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Doctor. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, and it's off the back of some public commentary you've put out there about your lack of enjoyment eating out in restaurants and what have you. Give us the thrust of your point, Marcus.
Well, I suppose it was a kind of a... It was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek sort of a tweet, but the point being, I mean, the point is quite a serious one. I wrote it on the back of having read a book recently that's recently been published by an Englishman who's moved to Ireland and living in the West. His name is Paul Kingsnorth, and the book is called Against the Machine. But basically, the tweet was that, yes, I don't enjoy eating in restaurants. When I encounter young children with headphones on, glued to screens, sitting at the table, not talking and not interacting with their families and not interacting with each other, I think it's a very unhealthy development in our society and a very unhealthy development in our time. So it's something I think that it's a conversation we need to be having about the amount of time our kids are spending on screens. I think it's quite dangerous even.
So it's not that it really impacts your restaurant experience, but you find yourself irked or annoyed or distracted by it to the point you'd prefer not to be there.
Well, not so much that. It's more. I think it's a certain kind of a sadness, really. When I see, I mean, it's. I think for most parents, I mean, I'm a parent, and I do spend a lot of time trying to police the whole screen thing with my own kids. I have a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old. You know. And I do think that spending too much time on screens is certainly, if it doesn't cause things like autism, it certainly makes them much worse. And I'm not just saying that as a parent, but even as a physician. I think there's enough research out there and enough evidence out there to show that the impact of screen time on kids can be quite detrimental in terms of their abilities to read and write, their abilities to socialize, their cognitive abilities. And just, you know, I mean, having kids, when we have kids, we kind of make a commitment. We make a commitment to them and we make a commitment to ourselves that we're going to do our best for them. And I think, you know, abdicating the role of parenthood and replacing it by a screen is wrong. And not only is it wrong in many respects, but it also removes us from the potential kind of joy of interacting and talking with our kids. So it's not so much that I'm annoyed in the restaurant. I feel a certain sense of kind of sadness that, you know, things happen in our society where certain things take hold of public opinion and certain things become accepted en masse. And we as a society start to engage in things. Mm. But because lots and lots of people are doing them doesn't necessarily make it right. And certainly, I think the amount of time that our children are spending on screens is doing a lot of harm to them, and it's doing a lot of harm to us as parents.
Well, the
and
truth
it's doing
as
a
well
lot of harm
too,
and to parenting.
Yeah, and listen, sometimes you will see toddlers, 3, 4, 5 year olds, not necessarily with headphones or what have you, being because you know to keep them quiet or entertained, or mom and dad or whoever it might be gets, you know, half an hour to eat out and feel like they've got a life outside of rearing children. I can see the benefit of that. If you're getting into the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds sort of locked in, the truth is they're not there, are they? They're not in that moment. They're not out for a family meal. They're locked into whatever they're doing.
No, they're not. And I mean, the truth of it is look, I mean, when we give our kids a screen and when they're interacting on the screen, I mean, do we really know the consequences of what we've done? I mean, do we know what they're interacting with, the game that they're playing, the psychological effects that that game will have upon their personalities or their development or their interaction with their peers or their friends? You know, I mean, particularly in the age group of anything from kind of 9, 10, 11 on to into the early teens. I mean, the online games the kids playing are more than likely to be interactive. And, you know, there are people, there are adults that groom kids on those types of websites. The children themselves tend to engage and often engage in a degree of bullying. I mean, I've often had my own daughter upset and hurt because of something that was said or done through the vehicle of a game. And I mean, ultimately, these things are not necessary. I mean, you know, why are we doing these things when they're not necessary?
Because
I
mean, the reason is because often too we all claim to be, I'm speaking as a parent. You know, we're always so blooming busy and we never have any time or we don't have time for ourselves. And I think often what we find ourselves doing now is giving in, you know, choosing the path of least resistance. Or like you say, well, there was other kids in the restaurant the last time with headphones on. Mine wants to do it. It means I'll be able to have a couple of pints or whatever it might be, right, or enjoy my meal. And the thing is I would never be judgy. But what's the output going to be, you know, in terms of when these children are 18, 19, 20, 21? That's social learning, isn't it? That is sort of interacting in different environments, and they're not going to have that experience. Their experience is going to be playing Fortnite, not really even knowing they're there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. And but even in the short term, you know, in younger kids, you know, when you look at the massive upsurge in the diagnosis of autism in our society, you know, I mean, there's no doubt and there's plenty of research to substantiate the claim that, you know, as I said, if screens don't cause autistic traits, they can make them worse. Now, I know there is a counter argument to that, in that some kids with severe autism, you know, interacting with a screen can certainly provide maybe some benefit, at least for the parent, in creating some sort of space where the child is distracted. But it's a little bit of a vicious circle. I mean, it's a little bit like nicotine or cigarettes. You're kind of satisfying an addictive process and calming someone's need for something with the same drug that's actually causing the problem. So I wouldn't be too concerned as a parent in terms of the older group of kids. I think when you get into kind of 18 and 19, you know, I think most kids tend to kind of, you know, move a little bit away from video games.
Yeah,
and
My point is that potentially if they're not missed out on, you know, experiences as 8 to 15 year olds, you know, where are they going to pick up that? If they haven't been socialising in those spaces as they've been growing up, is there not a concern that when they do hit 18, 19, 20, 21, that they find it more difficult to engage with people in real life because they would have spent so much time in these spaces It locked into this virtual space?
Well, I think you're right, but I think that might be an argument that applies to all of us in general.
One question, it's just we're kind of talking about what it means about the children's development or their presence. What do you think it says, if anything, about us as parents and our desire to sort of maybe want to engage with the younger people, or to say, you know what, I want you to be part of this meal, or I want you to be part of this experience? Like, is it, and I put it to you a little earlier on, that we just want to be able to have it 5 minutes to ourselves. Is there a reflection on us as well, that maybe we're not saying, you know, I need in this environment for my child to be involved, to be part of this, and I want to engage with them?
Well, I think you're right, but I think it's a bigger picture issue. You know, I mean, most parents who are allowing their kids to spend time on screens, there's a bigger picture in all of this, and the bigger picture probably boils down to money. I mean, mom and dad are working, trying to make money, trying to pay bills, trying to pay mortgages, trying to survive in the world. And when both parents come home from work, having interacted with the public or having worked all day long, you know, it's very hard to don the mantle of being a parent, you know, because being a parent involves work. There's no two ways about it. But, you know, like any work, the work of parenthood can be enjoyable. But if it's going to be enjoyable, then it has to be something that we're more devoted to. So, you know, the question of screens taking over the role of parenting in our society is a very dangerous development as to what kind of a society we're becoming. I mean, this notion that we have to be at work and we have to make money and we have to pay bills, all of that is entirely true. Mm. But in my opinion, I really do feel that we've lost the plot a little bit, and that parents, we need to be moving towards a society where we have one parent staying at home and one parent enjoying parenting and parenthood. I mean, you know, when you go out to dinner with your kids, having a conversation with your children, it can be a very, very pleasant experience. If you haven't been working all day, perhaps behind a till or at a counter or on a radio show, talking to the public or talking to people all day long, you know. Yeah. So, but the deeper question is how can we afford that? You know, how can we pay for that? And I think, you know, that's a real question we need to be asking ourselves.
Okay, and listen, you could get as deep as you like on this, because, you know, I mean, there's stuff that instinctively happens. There are genetic wants that we might have in terms of sort of, you know, father figures, mother figures, interaction upwards. You know, whilst we're not doing that, is that how bad adults in social media spaces can exploit children, that they start the grooming by being maybe that person that we're not? I don't know. You know what I mean? But you could go as deep into this, I think, as you liked. Listen, thank you very much for joining us and teasing that out with us. Some people will agree with elements of it, others might not, and so on and so forth. But we appreciate you having the conversation with us.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, and you have a nice day.
You too. Dr. Marcus De Bruin there. He's a GP, a philosopher, and a parent. What's your views? And also, too, by the way, because I'm not being in any way judgy, because we've been in that situation, and your hand Hudson a phone because, you know, he can play a little game so you can eat. You know what I mean? So I'm not in an ivory tower here. But, you know, maybe you are a parent and your 9 or 10-year-old does want the tablet and the headphones. Is it that you think there's no harm in it? It's you don't want a row? Or the fact that maybe that's the only way you can get out. I want all sides of it, if you don't mind, by the way, and it's a judge-free zone because we're all mums or dads, or we have mums or dads, right? All of us, that's the one thing. So it's no harm us having this conversation. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number. Or, of course, you can give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right, now, there's been a mixed response, mostly positive, but some caution, to the news that Charlie McConnell yesterday announced that €2 million funding is being made available for the Leisure Centre in Buncrana. Councillor Fionnán Bradley of Fianna Fáil broadly welcoming this, I presume. Fionnán, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners. Absolutely, Greg, there's no question about it. I'm certainly welcoming this. What a difference a year can make. You know the song, What a Difference a Day Can Make, but what a difference a year can make. In November of last year, November 24, we had a public meeting in Buncrana in advance of the general election. And of course, it was a very political meeting, and there was quite a lot of anger, rightly so, in relation to our pool and the fact that it hasn't been at this stage built. Fast forward now to November 25, and we're in a position where we're really at the last hurdle, where this funding, this up to €2 million in funding for the detailed design, has been awarded by Minister McConnell. And once this €2 million is spent and the detailed design is completed, we will then be in a position where Buncrana Leisure Centre will finally be shovel ready. This funding will ensure that all essential pre-construction activities can now be completed, positioning the project as shovel ready at that point then.
Councillor Jack Murray has given it a cautious welcome. He says the allocation, much of the allocation covers the cost of design work already done, with only a portion available to complete the detailed design work and move the project forward to the next stage. But I suppose, does that matter as long as this money covers whatever needs to be paid to get it to the next stage?
Well, indeed it does, Greg, and I'll tell you why. As far as I'm aware, in the region of about $500,000 has been spent by Donegal County Council in the last 3 years in relation to the leisure centre, with some design costs and the costs of planning and all associated works. So what Minister McConnell did yesterday and what the department have now done, instead of the council spending money at its own risk, which it had been doing with that $500,000 up until now, the department have essentially given the council that $500,000 back, and they've also committed this up to $2 million in funding that the detailed design will be completed. So the department are now saying, we are taking ownership of this project, we are putting the shoulder to the wheel, we are putting our hands in our pockets, we're giving you the money, we are committed to it. So the project is further on than it ever has been, because now the department is actually financially backing us, thankfully through Minister McConnell.
Now, this project has taken so long that it's ballooned into a €17 million build. I think it was way lower than that previously, but this is where we're at now, and the cost of everything has increased. Do you have any indication that the €17 million required to build the leisure centre will be there when it's actually sought, when these hurdles are overcome and it can go to sort of tender?
I am confident of that, and that's the significance of the Department of Sport allocating this €2 million, because why would they allocate that money and tell the council to progress on with the detailed design work if they wouldn't then, when that work is finished, follow the project through? So that's why I am more confident than I ever have been, and I would encourage everybody in Buncrana to be more confident than they ever have been, that this project is finally now being delivered. I know it's unbelievable, and I know it's very hard to accept, because there have been so many false dawns, there have been so many broken promises and so many missed deadlines, but this is it. The project is now happening. The pool is being delivered, and by the department and by Minister McConnell allocating this $2 million in funding yesterday, that is a clear, solid indication that when the detailed design is completed, the funding, the $17 million that is needed to actually build the pool, will be there. And I have no doubt that Minister McConnell will continue to deliver on that for us and Buncrana and Inishowen.
All right, then. Listen, thank you very much for that, Councillor Fionnán Bradley there. So it would appear to be good news, and as I say, it's been widely welcomed. Just some question marks over whether this is funding to cover old work or new work, but as I say, if it gets it over the line, if the department are forthcoming with the $17 million required, all good. A caller says, I totally agree with your last speaker. Too much screen time is not good at any age. Just for example, I'm on the road around school run time and I see maybe three or four at a bus stop glued to their phones, not talking, no interaction between them. Compared to when we were that age, the bus stop was where we had all the crack and heard all the crack of what was happening. It's very sad how life has changed. Everything is evolving now around the screen, they say. I'm delighted to hear that the... One second here. That's in relation... I'll just say one more. I 100% agree with Dr. De Bruyn. I agree with what he's saying. In relation to the body-worn cams, which are being trialled in two Derry hospitals, I'm delighted to hear that as an inpatient on a ward in hospital. I witnessed two nurses nightly getting the worst abuse ever, both verbally and brutally. I was very angry, but could do nothing about it. And this was no young person. These persons should have a choice. Go home or behave, because it's no environment for nurses nor carers. It's disrespectful. And believe me, the same person knew what they were at. So that's someone who witnessed abuse firsthand. And, you know, it's shocking, really, when you see the reports of the level of abuse in Letterkenny University Hospital, for an example, against people who were there to try and help others. A couple on Enoch Burke. Where's the support for Enoch from the teachers' union? The law has been used to deny justice into Enoch. The original issue hasn't been dealt with. Well, the pupil's gone, the principal's gone. Another, at the end of the day, Enoch Burke is correct. There are only two genders. He should have his job back. But it's not as simple as that, because you have to be able to get along with your colleagues and what have you. But anyway, keep your views on all of that coming to 086 60 25000.